Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text next step to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 Hope line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I know it's been a long time, to the latest edition of The Woke Bros. Of course, I'm your co-host, Big Waz, and I'm joined by my comrade, aka Wazzy Lambert. It's been so long, I forgot my damn intro.
Yeah, you forgot the intro.
I forgot to say what the people also know me as, my government name. And I'm joined, as always, by my homie, man, my brother, my comrade, out on the west side, Nando Vila. What's up, man?
How's it going, baby? How you doing?
Man, I'm good.
I've been traveling, dude. I'm sorry.
You've been doing a lot, man. Abandoned your boy. Doing a lot of – you going to Spain. You popping the Telluride. You all over the damn place, man. It's crazy when you a mogul out here, boy.
Someone's got to bring home the bacon, you know?
That's right. That's right. And so on today's show – you know, we try to talk about sports in a limited capacity, but every now and again, a sports story happens that we have to address it. And it's Brett Favre and his homies raiding the welfare fund in Mississippi to, you know, basically fund his own endeavors. It's just an incredible, incredible story that has to do with like Deion Sanders and Brett Favre's kid happened to play volleyball. It's the most ridiculous story. And just, you know, the misappropriation of government funds. And it's just a lot to it. We'll get into that at the end of the show. But I wanted to talk about something that I feel like, to me, is the hot button issue in politics right now. More so than inflation, more so than climate change, more so than, you know, the fucking fake CRT, critical race theory shit that we see that right wingers are trolling people with. To me, the crime situation in the country is like the hot button issue because everybody has an opinion and people are like passionate about crime. Even if it's the people that are like, chill, dude, it's not even as bad as it was in 1988. Like, relax, bro. Like, don't get your panties in a bunch, dude. Even those people who take that tack to what's happening with crime in this country are really passionate about that position. And then, of course, you know, you got the abolitionists and you got the police reform. You got people that just straight up like, we need to prosecute fucking criminals. Like, there's all kinds of sides of this, Nando. And I want to get into what made me want to talk about this. I was on Twitter and a homie that I follow, his at name is Queer Socialism. And he tweeted out something about, yo, I can't believe the creator of The Wire try to get me to think mass incarceration is. But he used, you know, the kind of language that people use, right? It's like, oh, like the he used the snarky language that's in fashion with people on the left. I don't recommend using that language, because it's legible to people like me and Nando and most of the people that might listen to the show, but it's just inaccessible and it comes off a certain way. Even if you're right, like you're wrong, right? In those instances, that's just our position here at the WoPros. Like, don't do that, whatever. And David Simon, the creator of The Wire, he goes on this long ass tweet thread where he's basically like, look, man, like they're not police ain't. The clearance rates are down in Baltimore. The murder rate has damn near doubled. And guess what? Me as a white dude out here in Baltimore, my likelihood of being hurt or murdered has not gone up. The people, these crimes are concentrated in the areas of the most marginalized people in the community. And so people like you can tweet from your nice little apartment and be like, oh, we don't think the police should lock anybody up or arrest anybody. And we need to do away with this. And we need to appropriate the funds to social workers. But like the people who are experiencing the brunt of this crime wave, man, like they don't feel like that because they right there in the trenches. And I just think there's so many directions that the crime thing goes. And then, of course, you know, somebody else comes in and is just like cites an article where the people that David Simon championed in The Corner or whatever the book that was about the cops that he dropped in 1990, a bunch of their cases are being overturned and wrongful convictions and all that shit. And it becomes this whole mess. But, you know, I just wanted to talk about crime because I want to know where you're at with it, like both the discussion and what like the solutions that are being presented and just how our audience, I don't want to tell our audience how to think about it, but I do want to offer them with our perspective about what's going on.
I think that the crime issue, I mean, I think you're right that it's become one of the more salient political issues right now, more than it was, say, 10 or 15
I can't
years
remember
ago.
The last time it was like this.
I also get the sense that it's just a hugely winning argument for the right.
Yeah.
And a huge driver of people to the right. I recommend everyone to check out an issue of Jacobin that came out earlier, I think last year, where the cover just said lower the crime rate. And it's a whole issue dedicated to crime and the ins and outs, the different debates, the solutions, et cetera. But I want to read some basic polling numbers on crime that was cited in that lead article, which was called Lower the Crime Rate. And it's pretty simple to me. I mean, here it is. It says polling shows that 86% of all Americans, 86% of all Americans want the police to spend the same amount of time or more in their neighborhood. But whatever conservatives say, that doesn't mean that there's a budding Blue Lives Matter coalition in the country. Americans also indicate that they want a different type of policing. 58% say the policing requires major changes, and 79% think police violence is a serious problem. So, I mean, I think it's all right there, you know? Mm-hmm. I think Americans want police, and they want police to do their jobs and protect them. And they don't want police to just like murder people. I don't know. Like, I think it's pretty, I think that's kind of the crux of it. It's not one or the other. I think that the twin issues of you can't understand crime without understanding the lack of social welfare that exists in the United States. I mean, I think that that's just incontrovertible. I was just in Europe, and in Europe, the crime rate is just lower. It just is, you know, especially the violent crime rate. There's some petty, you know, there's petty crime. They'll pick your pocket or something, but violent crime is just drastically lower in Europe than it is in the United States. Europe was not a particularly peaceful country not that long ago. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it was really transformed.
I mean, shit, man, they were letting bombs off in Ireland and freaking the UK. Yeah. Come on now.
Yeah. I mean, Italy throughout the 1970s was like just like a fucking, you know, cesspool of terror, political terrorism and things like that. And I think you can't understand the drop in the crime rate in Europe without the understanding that in Europe they implemented social democracy to a degree that they didn't do it in the United States. The United States just simply doesn't provide as much social assistance to its people, especially its poorer people, than other countries. And I think that that's a huge issue when you're thinking about crime. I did an interview for the Jacobin show back when I was doing it with a guy named Adonir Usmani, who I highly recommend reading or checking out that interview or whatever. But he explains why America is so policed or violently policed, why there is mass incarceration, and why the crime rate is so high. Because the crime rate in America is high compared to other developed countries. And it basically has to do with the way the American capitalist economy was industrialized. America, as you know, was a slave society during the 19th century, right when capitalism was industrializing. And whereas other countries that were industrializing at the time, say England or whatever, was industrializing with its own peasant population, like, you know, moving peasants from the fields into the factories. In the United States, because there was slavery, they didn't move those people into the factories. So the factories needed people to work. And so they imported a bunch of fucking Irish and Italians and Germans and shit, you know? So the industrial working class that emerged in those times were these white Europeans that really kind of were the driver of the Industrial Revolution in the United States, because Black people were kept in the South. By the time Black people moved north, the party was over, baby.
Deindustrialization.
Yeah, it was just starting. Yeah. And so that's why Black people were kind of shoved, you know, were kind of shoved into these ghettos in the inner cities, extremely poor with no social services at a time when deindustrialization was happening. And the United States never instituted social welfare. So these ghettos were created with incredibly high crime rates. And it's true. Like, if you look at any movie from the 1970s in New York or whatever, it's like the fucking, it's like a, you know, it's a war zone out there.
It's a hellscape.
So America, that's one of the reasons why America is so overpoliced and so and put so many people in jail, is because there is just this fucking insanely high crime rate because of that, because of the way the cities in America didn't industrialize with its own native population, created this kind of excess population that was put into ghettos, which basically just resort to crime. So I think like the debate is kind of always so focused on it's individual this, evils and things.
Yeah,
like that,
it's, you know? It's all, the debate is always this, either we're fighting crime or we're not. Essentially,
yeah,
we're policing the problem. Yeah. It's never about what are the factors that contribute to a person becoming the kind of person who commits violent crimes or becomes a thief, et cetera. It's never like, why don't we address that? How are we producing that kind of citizen? It's like, all right, how do we get the cops somewhere to stop this? It's never like, let's stop it at its root. Whereas, you know, when you talk about someplace like Baltimore, or you talk about someplace like Chicago, or you talk about someplace like New York or whatever, it's hard for me in certain places to be like, yeah, we need to get the cops out of there, where it's just like, I mean, we're still doing a drug war. Like, it's still, there's still money in selling crack and cocaine and heroin and fentanyl and all of that. And like, policing those industries only happen one way. So there's that. Then there's the like desperation that a lot of these things produce. Like, we can't not deal with the social welfare situation and have a situation where, you know, we have this underground drug economy where people know, like, this is a way to get paper. It's not like they can get a job at the Ford plant, make it six figures, get a dope apartment, buy a crib. Those options aren't available. So, and then, you know, it's another thing that you were somebody who hit me to this, the fact that somebody could be having a dope ass lunch in Hollywood outside somewhere, rocking their Rolex next to a fucking tent city. And it's literally next to a block where a row of seven tents people live at. Like, they don't do that shit in other countries. Like, you don't roll up in a fucking Maserati to eat brunch and drink bottles of wine that cost $200 next to a tent city anywhere else. They don't do this. So it's also that we're putting this shit in people's faces. Like, how are they not going to commit crimes, bust people over the head for their shit?
Well, the other thing is that, you know, so when you talk to, like, you know, criminal justice activists will say, like, you know, you defund the police and then you move it over to social services. The problem is that if you took away, like, if you reduced every single police budget to zero and put that into social service, it would be a drop in the bucket in terms of how many social services are needed to fix the problem. The problem is that you've got, like, there's got to be some sacrifices made by someone else, you know,
more,
like,
than just mainly
the rich people. Yeah, they got to tax the fuck. Like, America is under tax. The rich people in America are under tax. The state coffers are depleted. Like, there's a huge, like, the cost to fix the issue through social spending is like astronomical compared to the cost to fix the issue, quote unquote, or at least mitigate the issue through
with cops
policing.
Yeah,
cops are cheaper, sad to say. So I think what Americans basically are asking for, but the debate never really kind of addresses, is that people want crimes to be solved. American cops aren't trained to solve many crimes. Like, there's, like, you know, detectives.
Nah, this is buy and bust. Buy and bust. Yeah. Rip and run, get your stats, get your OT.
Yeah. So there are some reform issues that are to be done that aren't necessarily about defunding, but like there should be a bigger emphasis on crime solving. Like, I think if you look at the percentage of crimes that get solved in America, like, they're dropping the percentage. You know what I mean?
And you know the statistics that show that a lot of the crimes, and like they always tell this famous story in New York City. About how they fixed a lot of the crime in the subway, where like they fucking tracked on a map what time and where the crimes were happening. It was like, it's like 15 people just riding the subway and committing the crimes. Like, we locked those fools up. This shit is over. And so like, it does end up being like certain people committing all of the, like a small percent of people, very small percent of people committing all of the crimes, right? And so, like, yeah, actually getting those people situated would go a long way. Solving crimes would go a long way.
Yeah. Solving fucking crimes. Yeah. I mean, I think the debates, you know, it's kind of a surefire way to win elections is to, you know, if it's, that's what's so kind of bleak about the situation is that, you know, some DA somewhere will institute some reform, which probably is good, you know, or whatever. And then someone will commit a crime. And that's, I mean, may or may not be tied to the reform or not, but it's very easy for the politician running against them to tie them to it.
So easy.
You know, there's the famous like Willie Horton playbook from back in the 90s, like the George H.W. Bush. That guy actually did commit the crime based off of the reform that I think it was Dan Quayle or whoever it was did, or Dukakis. And that was like actually like a guy who did benefit from the reform and then committed the crimes. You know what I mean? But it doesn't mean that it wasn't kind of a heinous thing to do. But right now, you don't even have to do that. You just like, yeah. You know. This reform, there you go. This someone's kid got killed. There you go. You can't ever do it. So it's dispiriting in an age when you know the real thing that America needs, you know, like I don't know, we always talk about it. It's kind of boring, but Medicare for all would fix a lot of crime, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Fix a lot more crime than you think. It wouldn't fix all the crime, there would be still right. crime, but it would lower the crime rate, Medicare for all. These kind of big, robust social services. And I'm not talking about like criminal rehabilitation services and all that shit. That shit's a drop in the bucket. I'm talking about less poor people, more opportunity, more secure lives, more stability in the social system. All that shit reduces crime. Yep. So any reform that does that, that is a great way to do it. And I think if you talk to Bernie, for example, he would say that. You know, he would like if you ask him about crime or policing or whatever, he wouldn't like go into the actual nitty gritty of policing. He'll just pivot away to like, you know, we need to reduce inequality. We need to like give people more opportunities and we need to get Medicare for all. And that would be.
Yeah. And I think there's a tendency to want to dismiss, you know, quote unquote, liberal elites who are they have been out loud on their platforms in, you know, your liberal sort of outlets like the New York Times or the Post or whatever, or Twitter blue check people who are just, you know, they're describing American cities as a hellscape, right? And I understand the tendency to want to dismiss those people. But I will say just anecdotally, like I know people in New York City who I grew up with, literally taking the train with them at 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, leaving clubs drunk together. And homies would be like, Waz, like, this shit is not what you remember. The train station, the subway system ain't what you remember. This shit is fucked. I'm talking about people I grew up with. Granted, granted, some of these people are, they're black elites now. Yeah. You know, like, I do have to offer that caveat, but like, people that I wouldn't say are predisposed to being scared to ride the train, fam. Like, they're not predisposed to overstate what's going on in the New York City subway. And they're just like, bruh, it's something that I'm actively avoiding. Like, the crime, the craziness, the unpredictability, the fact that you can't trust the police to do anything about it. Like, I've heard these stories firsthand, you know what I'm saying, from a myriad of people in New York City, right? Yeah. So there is the, like, the, you know, the instinct to want to ignore any, you know, sort of lib who's talking about, what are we doing about the cities? Like, this homeless shit and the crime is fucked up. And, you know, basically we living in fucking New York from Taxi Driver, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's people that's going to do that. But I think some of it is legitimate. And more importantly, it's animating how people feel politically. It's turning people more reactionary and right wing.
Totally. Because, I mean, obviously the suburbanite who's never going to be the victim of crime kind of sees it on TV and all that stuff and is reactionary because of that. But the actual victims of crime, like as you mentioned, you know, the actual victims of crime, the vast majority of them are the working class. Black and brown people, you know, the average victim of crime worldwide is a worker commuting to and from their place of employment. That's just the reality of it. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of frustrating, and it's frustrating to see that, again, the most kind of hysterical people often are like well-to-do suburbanites who will never have to be the victims of crime. But there is a I think it is a contributor to the sort of declassification, if that makes sense, of American politics, and that a lot of working class people are moving over to the Republicans, especially Latinos. You're starting to see that more and more, and I don't think it's indistinguishable from the crime issue. I think it's probably one of the big drivers as well. So, yeah, I mean, listen, pass Medicare for all, that would be great.
That would be a nice start. So we can move on to that. So something that's like fucked up but equally funny. And that's the Brett Favre in Mississippi story. And I'm not going to lie, Nando, like when I saw it, I just saw the headline, like Brett Favre got caught stealing from the welfare funds in Mississippi get paid for speeches and volleyball and his daughter. And I was just like, this is not something I really want to pay attention to. And then it became one of these weird things, which is an aside, but like, that Ime Udoka situation happened, and there were people that were just like, if you're more mad at Ime Udoka than Brett, it's like, it became like this weird wedge issue out of nowhere, which whatever, I just wasn't really participating in it. But, you know, just a little bit that I did skim, and what it seems like to me is that when there's a monopoly on political power, the corruption can be way more brazen. Like, when there's just absolutely, positively no challenge to the political power of the people in charge, like, they can do this type of shit and not even think twice about it. Because the details are just fucking insane. Like, you really, like, this, like, you gave this guy $1 million for a speech? And
that
how
he never gave.
And how you reconciled it was from the welfare budget? Whoo-wee. But yeah, Nando, you got into some of this. What were your highlights from the Brett Favre Mississippi debacle?
Well, first there's the funny stuff. I mean, it's sad, obviously, but it's kind of funny, which is the actual crimes of Brett Favre, but also many others. I mean, Brett Favre was just one of many. I mean,
he's
what happened
a celebrity, was so his name is out there.
Yeah, but they were these people in Mississippi were treating the welfare fund, what they call the TANF fund, basically as their own personal slush fund to give to their friends and pet causes and whatever fucking companies they invested in and whatever, as much as almost $100 million basically got swindled from the Mississippi Welfare Fund, which Mississippi, by the way, is the poorest state in America.
Percentage of population, it's the blackest state in America, if I'm not mistaken, as well.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, for example, there's really funny ones where Brett Favre was given money from the welfare fund to build an indoor football facility so that he could recruit Deion Sanders' son to Southern Miss. Deion Sanders' son is like one of the nation's top quarterback recruits out of high school. And Brett Favre wants it to play. So the fucking welfare. So the governor gave him money to build a fucking indoor practice facility to recruit Deion Sanders. It's like the 90s, like 90s NFL that I grew up on is like, it's coming back, baby. Yeah. Brett Favre, it's Deion Sanders, you know, they're stealing from welfare. It's great.
Somebody find Andre Rison.
Yeah, Andre Rison. Wait, didn't Left Eye burn down
his house? Yeah, she burned his house. Yep, she burned his house down.
How is that not like an 8-part doc?
Yeah, it should be.
Let's pitch that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's like all kinds of funny stuff like that. There's the leaked text messages from Brett Favre to the guy from the government. And he was like, is there any way the media can find out about this and how much I get paid and how much and where the money came from? It's like,
narrator, the media did find out.
They did find out. It's like way more embarrassing than Brett Favre's leaked text messages to, was it Jen Sturt? What was the name of the sideline reporter that he sent dick pics to?
His red rocket.
When he was playing for your New York football Jets or whatever.
Yes, yes he was.
So there's the funny stuff. But then you kind of get to the sort of broader analysis as to why this happened or how this could happen. And, you know, my hot take is that this is all Bill Clinton's fault. Because what this stems from is Clinton's famous, maybe most famous law that he passed in 1996, which was welfare reform. So-called welfare reform, which basically ended the FDR era, you know, the New Deal era passed by FDR, assistance to, you know, needy families program that existed under the Social Security Administration, and which was administered by the federal government directly to the people. And they changed it in 1996 during the welfare reform law to do these kind of block grants to the states, in which they just give the state a bunch of money and then the state can do whatever they want with it. I mean, they're supposed to give it to poor people and there's some guidelines they got to follow. But like really, whoever the governor is there and the political system, they just take that federal money and they're I can do whatever the fuck I want with it. I can build a $5 million volleyball stadium.
That's even worse than the Medicaid mandate from Obamacare, because it's like at least like because they got the choice to just straight up say, no, we don't want Medicaid here. At no cost to us. We just rather cruelty because we hate the black dude. Like, this is just straight up like, no, here's the cash and do with it as you please. It's not even tied to like a program. It's just money.
Yeah. No, and so that's what this was. It's like they were just taking federal money that was given to Mississippi, meant to its poor people, and they were just like, here, Brett Favre invested in a biotech company that he wants to make happen, which is supposed to create a cure for concussions. Yeah, let's give that company $2 billion to boost Brett Favre's investment in it. You know, that's what they were doing with it. And it goes to show, first of all, I mean, just Brett Favre seems like an odious fucking human being. I mean, Sage Rosenfels, remember the quarterback? He used to play for the Dolphins.
Of course.
Brett Favre's teammate in the Vikings. He tweeted out something like, you know, I've been lucky in my post-playing career that I never stole money from my state's poorest citizens.
it's
I never insane. Accidentally did that. Never accidentally did that. But, I mean, a lot of this was done under the guise of charity. Right. Like Brett Favre has like a bunch of charities for the needy and for kids who were abused and blah, 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 blah. All that shit's bullshit. Like never donate to charity. Like this, just don't do it. You know, it's just not a good. They're so corrupt. It's so easily corruptible. It's so easily, you know, manipulated. Like the money goes to like whatever
the percentage of money that actually goes to what the charity is ostensibly about is always like minuscule.
Yeah. So it's just like, you know, and this is like one of the things that, you know, people always say about America. It's like, oh, we have low taxes. There's all these billionaires. But, you know, we have bigger charities than any other country. That's true. You know, America does have more charities and bigger charities. But it's a fucking grift. Yeah.
Like, are there so like do we have a dearth of people that need charity in this country? That's bullshit. Like, if anything, we're overflowing with people that need charity.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean it's kind of like the perfect 2022 story in that it's got some celebrities, it's got some throwbacks to the 90s. It's basically, you know, the chickens coming home to roost from you know, basically neoliberalism, which Bill Clinton kind of solidified by being the kind of left neoliberal, if that makes sense. You know, like he was the first Democratic president who was really I mean, you know, you can argue Carter or whatever, but like really it started under Reagan and then Bush and then kind of was given bipartisanship through Slick Willie. And, you know, the effects of that are being felt today. That welfare reform law doubled extreme poverty in this country, like basically overnight. One of the most heinous things that anyone's ever done in America, which was, you know, our boy Bill Clinton. And
did he play the hell out of that sax on Arsenio Hall, brother.
Yeah.
So he was the first black president. First black president.
How did they get away with that? How did they get away with that? Like,
he was the first black president because he got his dick sucked while he was at work. Like, that was part of it. Like, that was the whole part of the appeal. Like, oh, he's like this slick talking, smooth hustler type of dude, which he is and was. Like, that's true. But that's actually true. But it's, you know, it's pretty racist to say that's what made him a blackish kind of
funny. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway,
yeah, read up on the Mississippi grift. Again, man, like the Republicans got that thing monopolized down in Mississippi. It's one of the reddest, most reliably red states in the union, if not the most. It might be literally the reddest state in the union. And when you have that level of unchecked power, this the shit you get, bro. Like, just Brett Favre's kid is only going to be at that school for 4 years.
Yeah,
and they're stealing
fucking women's volleyball.
Yeah, you know? It's crazy, bro. And they're stealing tens of millions of dollars.
$5 million stadium in Southern Mississippi for women's volleyball, or I guess men's could play there too. But volleyball? Who gives a shit about volleyball?
It's insane.
$5 million? How much could it cost?
It's insane, dude. Insane. And anyway, man, there's your dose of American corruption. We'll be back next week, of course. Become a Patreon at patreon.com/countthedings. It'll cost you a cup of Starbucks a month to do so. Support a lot of the content that we're doing out there. Shouts to my man Sean, producer Sean on the fucking ones and threes. And yeah, we'll see you guys next week. Peace.
Later.